This is the Eurosnob Podcast.
I'd like to welcome everybody into the Eurosnob Podcast. My name is Ian Smith, and I'm joined by Alex John. Alex, how's it going?
Not too bad. Ian, how about yourself?
Could be worse. The result could have ended up worse than a draw, and I would be in a lot worse off a place than I am now, but not too bad considering all things.
Yeah, it was certainly an interesting game yesterday. 3-3 draw away at Bournemouth. At one point, we were down 3-0.
Yeah, so. before we get too far into it, I'm just going to throw the disclaimer out there that I didn't turn the game on until the 60th minute, and I know you were so frustrated watching that first half that you skipped probably till about the 60th minute.
Yeah, anytime we have a game during the week, I obviously can't watch it at work, so I usually TiVo it. So I got home and I started watching, and you know, within 20-25 minutes, we were already down 2-0. And at that point, I was like, all right, I can't believe I stayed off the internet all day at work for this. So I started skipping forward, and then you know, I saw us get our first goal at 3-1, and from there, you know, I kind of watched sporadically, but you know, I think I watched enough to have a general idea of, you know, kind of the major issues there. But
yeah, I would have to agree with you. I think that it's kind of typical Arsenal not really showing up. But to be fair, it was 48 hours after our last game. You can say these guys are professional athletes. They should be able to bounce back, but that's a high level competition, and to have to play 48 hours after, I don't know what your thoughts are, but to me, I think that may have had some sort of an effect. I mean, okay, in a vacuum, sure, but we've kind of seen this as a trend from our boys. So
yeah, to some extent. I mean, I mean, even the best athletes, you know, it's tough for them to play 48 hours later, let alone footballers who, you know, are covering 10, 11 kilometers a game and then basically asked to go do it again. You know, Bournemouth did have the extra day's rest. And I certainly think that we saw some additional freshness from them. There was definitely some fatigue on our legs. I don't think there's any question about that. You know, although we did, you know, there were a significant amount of changes from the New Year's Day game against Palace. You know, we had Coquelin come in. You know, we had Mustafi back, and so I mean, who am I forgetting? I think there was one more that's just not coming to mind right now. You know, we had Ramsey come out wide.
Right.
So you know, we did have some fresh legs in there. Like obviously, as we talked about before, Wenger's not the best at rotating the squad, and I still think his management of the squad and depth and everything like that is not good. But you know, I think fatigue definitely played a part. Having said that, I think the problems that surfaced in the first half were also an indication of a team that just wasn't ready.
You know, it's kind of something that we've fallen on before, that it seems like they're not ready. Is it just the way that they're set out there? You know, it's not that they're not ready. Is it just tactical miscalculations by Wenger? I mean, we continue to see Xhaka sitting deep and Coquelin playing further up the pitch. But in a game like that, where it seemed like both teams were really playing a high line, it seemed like our midfield was congested, playing Coquelin in a more congested area, asking him to play with the ball at his feet, just sounds like a recipe for success. And you know, we even saw a bit when Ramsey came on, you saw Ramsey dropping deep quite a lot. And again, fine, Aaron Ramsey doesn't do what he's supposed to do anyways. Whatever, I got it. But you know, I don't know necessarily that it's really on the players. And I've always been somebody that kind of puts more of the blame on the players than the manager, but I don't know, man. Coming out of that game, I wonder if it's just if Wenger's, I'm not sure the word I want to look here, tactical naivety or
yeah,
you know what I'm trying to say.
I think you can go two different ways, and I don't think either one is necessarily right or wrong. I think the players definitely looked a little shell-shocked with the energy that Bournemouth came out with. I think with the way they pressed and kind of the midfield interchange that Bournemouth had, and the fact that Bournemouth was really pushing their fullbacks high up the pitch. I mean, they were getting forward right from the very beginning, and that seemed to come as a shock to us. Now, to your point, I think, and I saw this on Twitter today, and I actually agree with it. I think what someone said is, you know, Wenger doesn't really set his team out to kind of adapt tactically. I feel like he sets his team out just to go play. You know, he says, look, guys, go play, express yourselves, do your thing. I don't think he necessarily sets them out in most games with like a one tactical point. You know, and it's not necessarily saying that he's a bad tactician, but I think sometimes he has so much faith in the brand of football that we play that sometimes he thinks, oh, well, you know, if we play our game, we can overcome this or things like that. Now, you know, with the Coquelin thing, I mean, you know my feelings on Coquelin. Him pushing forward in the box, I saw it several times at the beginning of the game yesterday. I had no idea what he was trying to do. You know, but obviously he's following instructions, so I can't necessarily bash a player for following instructions. I'm gonna criticize the person who gave him that instruction, though. But maybe kind of, I'm just curious to hear your takeaways from. I know you didn't watch the first half, but you know, kind of what you've read, and then going into the second half, and maybe how you saw some tactical changes, substitutions, things like that.
I think nobody ever wants or is gonna wish for a player to get hurt. And you know, hopefully Coughlin's back soon. We really need him. I haven't heard anything one way or the other, but with Elneny gone on at African Cup of Nations, we're really short in midfield now. Please, you know, if only we could have Jack back right about now, we'd be in a little bit better shape. But I think that Ramsey, for all of his faults, and again, I'm gonna try and keep my Ramsey fanboy in check here. For all of his faults, when he's allowed to play that box-to-box role where he can drop deep, collect the ball, connect, and then drive forward, I think it was shortly after that injury when he dropped in, you saw him collect the ball deep, play a little 1-2, get the ball wide, and immediately make the run down into our box and just miss getting on the end of, I want to say it was an Alexis ball into the box. He just offers a different dynamic in there. And, you know, that didn't really start. You know, like I said, I didn't see until about the 60th minute. But when the parts that I did see, he was impacting the game more than you ever see Coquelin do in terms of possession and chance creation. So for me, that was really, well, there's one other thing. I want to get your take on Ramsey first before I kind of take this to the other big tactical thing that I saw. So
yeah, with Ramsey, it's like you said. I mean, he started kind of in that number 10 role, you know, and initially when I saw the lineup, I thought Iwobi was going to play as the 10 and then Ramsey out wide, but he started in that number 10 role. It's different because he plays higher up the field for Wales, but Wales don't necessarily play the same system we do. And I think with Wales, he really doesn't he doesn't have much restriction on how he plays. But, you know, in that 10 role, he just looked a little uncomfortable. But I also think he wasn't necessarily getting he wasn't really getting much from that Jacka Coquelin midfield with how Bournemouth were pressing. Coquelin, you know, obviously offers no outlet in possession, and there was just no sort of cohesion in midfield. Now, like you said, like, you don't want a player to get injured, especially with the depth or lack thereof that we have for the next month or so. But once Ramsey did slide into midfield with Jacka, there was definitely more fluidity to our play. I mean, I think there was more purpose, there was more drive, we were creating more, and everything just looked more threatening going forward. So I've seen a lot of people slate Ramsey on Twitter today, and I think it's largely unjustified. And I'm not necessarily a Ramsey fanboy or like getting in the Ramsey Wilshire wars, but I think a lot of the flack he's gotten was a little unjustified. Obviously, it was his first start in several months, if I'm not mistaken. And you know, he's playing with a midfield of Xhaka and Coquelin. You know, one guy is a really skilled passer, but not necessarily the most athletic type player. The other one covers a lot of ground, but doesn't necessarily do anything. So, I mean, I think to place a lot of blame on him is tough. I mean, he didn't have a great game, but, you know, I get a little frustrated with some of the scapegoating I see. And now people are saying, oh, you're a hypocrite because you blame Coquelin for everything. But this is different.
It is different. Ramsey, he's such a form player, a confidence player. When, you know, a player like Ox, for example, he's the same way. I think Ramsey's a far superior player, but the same kind of thing goes into it, where when Ox wasn't getting a lot of games and he was making mistakes, you heard, well, he just needs a run of games. He needs a run of games. He's a form player. He's a confidence player. Well, where is that sort of attitude to Ramsey? Why? Because he's, what, 26 now and should grow past that? Players don't grow out of that. That's just the kind of player that he is. So for him to really not get a solid run of games and to not play with a consistent group of players. And, you know, I wonder if there's anything to the fact that when he's playing with a striker like Giroud, he's a very stationary center forward. He takes up a lot of that space in the middle of the pitch. Where does Ramsey like to make his runs? Right through that space. So if your center forward is in that space, and personally, I don't think the number 10 is Ramsey's best spot. I think playing in one of those defensive pivot spots in a three-man midfield, that's his best spot, where he gets that box-to-box role, where, you know, he makes those runs through the middle. And when you have a striker like Giroud who's always there, you know, if he's trying to make that run there, it's already crowded. There's already somebody standing there, and it's just kind of, again, I don't know if that's true. That's my personal opinion on it.
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely something to that, because, look, I mean, I like Olivier Giroud. I think he's a very good player. I mean, obviously, he has really good technical skill. He wasn't blessed with pace, unfortunately. You get a lot of positive things when he's in the game. You know, his ability to link up, you know, his ability to provide an aerial threat, both in attack and defensively, you know, clearing out set pieces. You know, he works hard for the team. He creates assists. And but I also think that his presence, like you said, hinders the other attacking players to some extent, because he doesn't have the ability to interchange positions. He's not necessarily one who's going to get behind the defense. So it is, like you said, he often has to drop deep to try to link up and then get on the end of crosses. But he's not someone who's going to make that big run behind a center back or a fullback and get into the space there. So it does limit Ramsey a lot, I think. And even Alexis to some extent, because Alexis becomes far more predictable because he's playing on the left. You know he's going to cut in on his right. And so you're basically able to kind of peg his movement. So, you know, it's one of those things where Giroud is a great player, but I'm not sure the team functions as well with him in it than without him. So it's kind of a selection quandary for Wenger, because I do think there are some games where Giroud is a good option to have, but in terms of the best system of the team, I'm not sure he fits it.
Yeah, I certainly can't disagree. I think he's a brilliant squad player. I mean, there's absolutely no denying it. If he played for a different team in the Premier League where they played a direct style, maybe somebody along the lines of Palace, where it's get the ball forward, get the ball in the box, man, he would just pound in goals nonstop.
Yeah, and I
think he's a spectacular player. Just doesn't fit perfectly what Wenger wants to do, and that goes back to the tactical question that we started this whole discussion off with.
Before you say that, sorry.
No, you're good.
I just think it sounds harsh to say, because we think about the last three games. He scores the game winner against West Brom. He scores that wonder goal against Palace. And then he scores the equalizer and creates two assists against Bournemouth. So, like, people might hear this and say, like, how can you slay Giroud for all this? But you got to look at the bigger picture. When you've seen this team play at its best this season, you know, granted, Giroud's been injured for chunks of it, so it's hard to say, but, you know, the fluidity of movement that we saw in that 3-0 win against Chelsea, for example, you don't see that when Giroud's in the lineup. So yeah, he's a player who's capable of scoring in bunches and he'll score, but the team as a whole doesn't function as well. So I just want to make sure people can kind of get that we're not bashing Giroud. You know, we know what he brings to the team. I think you and I both see the value there, but it's a system issue. Like you said, tactics.
Absolutely zero bashing. I mean, like you said, I don't want it to sound like that either, that we're bashing him in any way, because I think he's spectacular. I think he's a brilliant option to have off the bench. But, you know, like you said, it's just what he's good at doesn't necessarily fit with what we do from the start of a game. And just think about the goals that he has scored and created in the last three games. It was a winner late, two of them, and then there was a couple assists and a tying goal late. What were we doing in all of those? We're getting the ball forward as quickly as we can and attacking the box. You know, so what we're doing tactically in that time of a game suits him more than what we try and do tactically from the beginning of the game. And now that can bring up the whole discussion of, well, should we just be playing a more direct style? And we're not going to get into that today. You know, one of the other things that I know we both wanted to touch on is the effect that Lucas Perez had when he came on. And that kind of ties into the Giroud discussion as well, because would we be better off with, you know, in a game like that and, you know, whatever game's coming up, with Alexis playing centrally and Lucas playing wide? I'd like to know your thoughts on that.
I think there's definitely some merit to that. And you look at what Lucas has done every time he's gotten a chance, he's produced. And so he's got to kind of be sitting in that dressing room wondering, what do I have to do to get a start around here? You know, I think he'll start on the weekend in the FA Cup game, but you know, every time he comes on, he looks direct. He looks threatening. He anytime he crosses into the box, it's not just an aimless cross. He's picked someone out, and it's usually a good decision that he's made. He's a terrific finisher, as we saw yesterday and in other games. So I definitely think there's merit to what you said about maybe him playing left, Alexis through the middle, because it does offer that ability to interchange. But at the same time, you know, he's got a strong left foot, so he can come in on that. He can cross, he can shoot, he can create. You know, I'm not saying he's a phenomenal player by any stretch of the imagination, but he's a very good player. He understands his role. And I think at this point, you know, with the wing situation as it is, we're always kind of throwing players in and out, where Ox will be in for a week and then Iwobi will be in, and then we've got Theo. I think Lucas has definitely earned a run of games. I'm really trying to understand Wenger's thinking with easing him in, if that's the thought process, because he's like 27 years old. He's played in La Liga, you know, for many years, not for many years, but for a few years. I mean, he's got experience. I don't quite get the skepticism, because every time he's played, he's performed. I don't know if it's a case of Wenger not knowing his best position, whether he's a winger or a striker. But in our system, if, you know, with the 4-2-3-1 we kind of play, I don't think you necessarily need to pigeonhole a guy into a role. But, I mean, I know you were quite impressed with Lucas as well yesterday. What were your kind of takeaways from how he contributed?
Yeah, the biggest thing for me is just the intent that he has every time he makes a run. If you notice, it's not just making runs for the sake of making runs or him just pulling wide to get the ball at his feet. He does does do that from time to time, but he makes aggressive attacking runs to get in behind and to get the ball in a dangerous location. And when he does get the ball in a dangerous location and can play across, he plays across with conviction. He hits the ball hard across the box, and he's looking to pick out somebody's head. He's very, very decisive in that final third. And that's something that we don't necessarily have enough of. I think the word I'm looking for is he keeps it simple. I don't mean that as a negative. Keeping it simple. It's just, you know, Ox tries to overcomplicate. Iwobi tries to overcomplicate. You see Theo trying to overcomplicate. When Alexis is wide, he tries to overcomplicate. Lucas is, I'm making this run. It's on my foot. I'm shooting it or I'm crossing. It's simple. It's two, three touches and moving on to the next thing.
Do you think with Lucas, I mean, when I've seen him, the times he has not struggled, but areas where I've seen him kind of make mistakes is largely in possession and games where we're kind of controlling things. Do you think maybe at least in games where we have to play more direct or where we have to move the ball more forward quickly, where we're not trying to just pass through midfield and kind of play our traditional way, do you think that's where his attributes can be best seen? And kind of as a follow-up to that, and a lot of people have kind of thrown out the comparison to Podolski in the sense that, you know, that obviously they're more direct type forwards, kind of, you know, where even if they're playing wide, their main thought is, you know, get the ball wide, either get a shot off or put a cross and not necessarily get involved in the buildup as much. Do you see any merit to that comparison?
I mean, on the comparison, I'm not sure. I think maybe there's some. I think it might be oversimplifying. Just it may be more because they're left-footed, left-sided, striker, winger type players, to be honest. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there really is. I haven't personally seen that. But on the tactical side of it, like you said, that might be why we've seen Wenger kind of ease him in, right? Because if he's struggling to kind of perform and execute when we are possessing the ball more and we are playing that style of a game, and to be fair, we played that style of game in the Champions League and he scored a hat trick. You know, I want to make sure we give him that credit, but there's certainly, to me, is something to that angle that, yeah. You know, that could be why maybe he's just, because when he played at, you know, his previous club, they didn't play a possession style game. They played a Leicester City style of game. So to make that change going from the level of competition that he did to Arsenal, that's going to take some time.
Yeah, and I wonder if he came in thinking he was going to play striker mostly. You know, I don't know if he necessarily – I know Wenger mentioned it when he signed him. He said, you know, he can play out wide if need be. But I kind of always thought that the plan with Lucas was to, you know, to play him up top or, you know, in a two if we were chasing a game. I don't know if the plan necessarily was to play him out wide as much as we've seen this season. You know, it could be the fact that Alexis has been a lot better up top than we expected.
Yeah, I think that's it right there.
But, you know, at the same time, like, he just seems like one of those players you got to try and get on the pitch somehow, because you don't necessarily need tons of – we don't need another player who's just going to get involved and build up and kind of clog things up in the middle. You need that guy who's going to be direct, like you said. And Theo's that way to some extent. You know, Theo's not a guy who's going to – drop into midfield and link up with everyone there. He's someone who's going to try and get in behind. So I guess, you know, the thought process is maybe you don't want to play both of those guys at the same time. You need one wide player that's going to kind of tuck in and, you know, give you that extra number in midfield and try to control the game. But kind of in connection with Lucas, and I'm kind of getting off topic, but you've also got a guy who is just recently back into training and is equally as versatile in Danny Welbeck.
Now, I was just going to go there too.
Well, because, you know, obviously you don't want to put too much pressure on him because he's coming back from two serious injuries. But I've also think the team, anytime he's been in the team, we've looked really good. And I'm curious how you fit him in with the pieces we have. Do you use him as a squad player, a wide player? Where do you use him? Because I know you're a fan of his from previous conversations we've had.
Personally, all things being equal, I mean, I would set out with, you know, assuming everybody's healthy, I would set out with Lucas, Alexis, and Theo across that attacking trio. And that leaves you Welbeck and Giroud coming off the bench as just – between the two of them, the impact they could have coming off the bench could be ridiculous, to be fair. I think he fits in, you know, as far as where Arsene's going to use him, that depends on what he's going to do with Alexis. Is Arsene Wenger really going back to playing Alexis wide? Because if that's the case, then I don't know where he's going to put Welbeck in. I really don't, because I don't necessarily see him. I don't know that I necessarily see him starting him up top in place of Alexis, because I think he's so tied to Giroud that if he's going to rest Alexis, which he hasn't really shown a propensity to do, then, but if he does, he's going to put Giroud up top. I really don't know where he's going to put him in.
Yeah. Off topic, but if Alexis even steps foot near the pitch this weekend, I'm going to throw up. There's no reason he should play. I don't even care if we lose, honestly. There's no reason he should play, because at this point, you need to get him any semblance of a rest. I think Ozil's going to come back fresh because he's had these 2 weeks off. But getting back to what you said about Welbeck. Sorry, I had to rant there about Alexis. But
no worries.
Getting back to what you said about Welbeck, I tend to disagree. I tend to think I would play something like Alexis up top, and then I don't know. I might go Welbeck left, and then depending on the game, you go Theo or Ox right. It's very hard because I think they offer such different things. You know, Theo does give you that direct threat from the wings, that out to in run. Welbeck is someone who I actually think is underrated technically. I think he is someone who can receive a pass and make things happen. I do think Welbeck and Lucas might be competing for the same spot. And then you also got Iwobi to think about. You know, I mean, I think Wenger's shown a lot of faith in Iwobi. Now, having said all that, we might be totally getting ahead of ourselves because, as we know, Arsenal's never fully healthy. So as soon as Welbeck gets back, we'll lose someone else for a couple weeks. Obviously, yeah, I hope that doesn't happen.
It's certainly fun to imagine having a full side, right?
Oh yeah, it'd be a dream. But kind of in that mold, we lost Coughlin to injury yesterday. We don't know how serious that is. Unless I'm missing something, we only have two healthy central midfielders right now. Is that right?
That sounds right to me. I mean, right? Santi's out, Elneny's it, Cup of Nations, Coughlin's out, leaves us Xhaka and Ramsey.
Yeah, and we sent out a capable midfield player on a loan that we can't recall him from. So that was brilliant thinking there.
And if what I saw was right, actually, I didn't go back and check it, so I'm just going to throw it out there. Don't quote me on it, but Bournemouth hasn't won without Wilshere in their lineup since he joined. I want to say that's true. I don't.
That sounds right.
Somebody fact check it. Let me know. But I'm going to go with it because I like that for narrative's sake.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about it, now we're basically in a position where, I mean, African Cup of Nations goes for at least a month, doesn't it? Or give or take.
Around how far is Egypt going to make it, though?
Knowing our luck, they'll go to the final. So Elneny misses more games. But
see, Bob Bradley's not their manager anymore. They're not going to do that.
That's true. They might actually win something. So you basically got a Xhaka Elneny. I mean, sorry, Xhaka Ramsey pivot. It's the one we all wanted, but
about damn time, right?
But the problem is now we have no other option. So if one of them goes down, you're literally stuck putting like Oxlade-Chamberlain in midfield.
And the nice thing, though, to be honest, is that I'm kind of looking at our fixture list right now. We've got the FA Cup at the weekend. Then we go another week before Swansea and another week before Burnley. We don't have any midweek games in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think
that as far as if there was going to be a time to be short, now is probably the time to do it. And it's against nothing overly difficult.
I think if we can survive the next 2-3 weeks, I mean, I don't know what Coughlin's injury was. It looked muscular, but
I think hamstring, but I haven't heard.
Yeah,
length.
So that's certainly a concern. It's pretty Arsenal that as soon as Ramsey gets back healthy, we lose Elneny to AFCON and Coughlin to injury. I mean, that's pretty fitting. But, and now there's a lot of burden placed on Xhaka, and he's been getting a lot of flack. And
rightfully so, I think.
Rightfully so. I think his play yesterday was really, really stupid because, first of all, I mean, obviously the Bournemouth, the little guy, went down super easily. But You can't push a guy from the back. You know, if you were maybe shoulder to shoulder, I could understand that, but not in the box, not in the
that
box.
Position. And I think it's even to a more basic level than that, that he was dribbling towards the end line, kind of away from goal. Just force him. Don't let him turn. Just stay in between him and your goal. He's not going anywhere. The only thing he's going to be able to do to keep – he's going to get to the end line and try and stop it, and then you step in and take the ball.
And I guess, you know, and I – because I'm such a fan of his passing and his ability, maybe I overlooked a lot of the complaints people had about his disciplinary record in Germany. And he's had a few issues here at Arsenal, let's be honest.
I think he's just – and like you said, I think – a lot of us overlooked it because of how good his passing in. He's a god awful tackler.
Yeah, he slides in super recklessly. I mean, and he leaves his feet a lot. So even if he doesn't commit a foul, oftentimes he's now left on the ground while the other team breaks.
Sorry to interrupt. I forget which game it was, but I remember a couple weeks ago, one of the games during the holiday season where we turned the ball over in kind of like in between our attacking third and the midfield third, and he came flying in from 10 yards away, dove in on a tackle, missed, went sliding past it, and they broke down the play with no midfield in front of our back four. Sorry, it was just something that stuck in my mind, kind of exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah, and I think what you said kind of goes to reading of the game, you know, because he obviously is not fast, he's not quick, so you've got to compensate for that with proper positioning. Now, in a game like against Palace, where I think he had like the most passes of anyone in the Premier League this season, yeah, that was great, and it was awesome to watch, and he really showed off his array of passing. In a game like this that was very fast-paced and where he kind of gets caught out in midfield, and, you know, he is left a little bit exposed, and that's kind of where some of his shortcomings show through, and it's frustrating to see because he's such an asset in the attack, but at times he can be a liability defensively, and I don't know if it's still not fully understanding his role, you know, because I think the way they played at Borussia Mönchengladbach was different, but, you know, I mean, you think about the penalty he gave away against Stoke, you think about the red card against Swansea, you know, you think about the penalty he gave away yesterday, It's a little frustrating. You know, granted, I'm just going to rant here again. So Michael Oliver calls a penalty against Xhaka for pushing Fraser down. Fair enough. Good call. Same play happens before Bournemouth's third goal, where Fraser pushes Bellerin out of the way from behind. No call. He comes in and scores. I would love a little consistency in Premier League officiating, but then again, Mike Dean is still employed, so what do I know?
I have no comment. To be honest, I didn't see it. So
it was literally a carbon copy of the same play, both a shove from behind, and for some reason, I literally demonstrated a shove from behind.
You did. I saw it. It was well done.
Ian saw it.
It was a foul penalty, for sure.
The rest of you will just have to imagine it. But I just the consistency. But all things aside, you know, that's still not. I'm not going to make excuses about referees. You know, yesterday, that result unfortunately was not what we needed.
And that result was entirely our fault.
Yeah, you fall behind 3-0 to a Bournemouth side that has been okay this season, but they've not been spectacular. And now you're chasing the game and. You know, you're left in a position where you're scrambling to just get an equalizer. Now, I am curious to get your take on the whole Giroud celebration debacle that everyone's kind of flipping out about. I was like, dude, you just equalized the game at 3-3. Of course you're going to take 10 seconds to celebrate. And I don't think the time difference between the end of that goal and the next kickoff was any different than the other goals. So I feel like people were just making a thing of it. I saw this stuff about how it exemplifies Arsenal's mentality. And I was like, come on, give me a break with this.
Narrative, clickbait. That's all it is, man. I mean, I saw the same thing too. And I can't even take that shit seriously anymore. I mean, come on. Like, he scores a goal to tie the game in the 92nd minute and takes 20 seconds to celebrate.
Not even 20 seconds.
Like, I mean, yeah. Really, between the time the ball went in the net and the time the ref there the ball was placed at center for the next kickoff at 15, 20, like he – yes. Oh my God. That made it that cost us the game. No, Jesus. We almost lost the game right after that. You want to talk about something that exemplifies our fragile mentality. What the hell happened the next 4 minutes after we tied that game?
And the thing is, he scored a goal and assisted on two. It's not like he did nothing all game. I think he earned the right to show some sort of excitement. And, you know, people kind of contrasted that to Alexis throwing a tantrum after the game and throwing his gloves and stuff like that. I mean, we'll get into that a little bit later. But, you know, kind of another issue that I've seen arise on Twitter today, as you can tell, I've been on Twitter a lot today. It's more insightful after a loss because you want to see what people are complaining about and if they're seeing the same things you're seeing. But it seems like a lot of people are kind of waking up to this belief that Petr Cech has not been what we expected at goalkeeper. Am I off on this? I mean, I don't remember a game where he's necessarily made like tons of huge saves. I remember tons of games where he's gotten beaten near post or tons of games where he's faced a penalty and gone the wrong direction. Like, I don't even know why we bother. Why do we bother putting anyone in goal for the penalty? Just let them score it because he's never going to come close anyway. But
let Alexis play goal or something. He'll enjoy jumping around.
Yeah, exactly. And at least he's quick enough to get down now. But kind of, I'm curious to get your take on Petr Cech and, you know, honestly, should he be the number one moving forward? I mean, he will be, but should he be?
Well, I think you kind of – something you said when you're talking about Alexis there, you said he's quick enough to get down. You know, generally when you talk about keepers, you don't think, oh, well, he's lost a step. But what do all the best keepers in the world have? Manuel Neuer, Hugo Lloris, like guys like that, they have that incredibly quick reaction to get down and get a foot on the ball or get a fingertip on the ball when it's, you know – something that's low and near post or low far post, you know, they have that ability. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not trying to, you know, say that I'm some soccer genius or whatever, but I started seeing that last year with Cech. You know, I thought that by the end of the year last season, there's something that looked off. And this year it didn't start well, and it hasn't. I mean, yeah, we had that run of clean sheets early, but he didn't ever really have to do anything spectacular. He's making the saves that he should make. But he's not making the saves that he shouldn't make, if that makes any sense.
I think the way I saw it worded online earlier today was he's not doing anything that a non-world-class keeper couldn't do.
Right. Yeah, he's not a world-class keeper anymore.
Yeah, I think
no doubt about that in my mind.
I think we signed him with the feeling that, well, keepers can play into their late 30s, early 40s, so we still have 4 or 5 good years of him. We don't. He's not what he was. And one of the most frustrating parts of watching an Arsenal game now is anytime the ball is passed back to him or he has to take a free kick, it goes either right out of bounds and the opposition gets the ball back, or it goes straight to the opposition. I mean, his kicks never serve any purpose. His distribution's terrible. I just kind of wonder if stylistically he just fit a team like Chelsea that didn't necessarily look to build from the back, you know, that looked to kind of get the game moving from the back and then passing it forward. You know, they were perfectly content to play direct and then defend with that deep line. So he never really had as much pressure to kick the ball well or to, you know, his main emphasis was on shot stopping. And now at his age, he's just not doing it as much anymore. And I don't see what he's doing right now that Ospina couldn't do.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even handling the balls in the air all that well. You know, he makes a mess of them half the time, or when he has to come out and come outside of his 6 yard box and seems to make a mess of it every time. So honestly, maybe it's just a bad stretch of play. Maybe he pulls it together and steals us 8 points through the rest of the season. I mean, that would be amazing if he could. I don't know, really. For me, I'm not sure that Ospina, he might make a couple more saves as far as shot stopping, but we may give up a couple more goals off set pieces. I'm not sure that bringing him in really does anything. For me, I think we just need to go. I think we need to move on from him in the summer and go find somebody else.
With Ospina, I think he's a great shot stopper. I think you look at the two games against PSG. Those could have been a lot worse if Ospina hadn't played, in my opinion. You know, in the sense that those, I think a lot of the saves he made were saves that Cech couldn't have made. Now, I do see your point about the set pieces and. You know, the fact that every time he goes up for a set piece, he seems to come down injured and grabbing some part of his body. And, you know, he looks like a hospital patient every time a set piece finishes. He makes me nervous there. But in terms of shot stopping, I think he's definitely the better player. Now we do have a player on loan at Roma who is quite confident in his ability, but I'm with you. I think that,
yeah, you know, bring him back if you want to give half of your supporters a heart attack every time a ball enters our defensive third. I mean,
but if you want to look at pure shot stopping, he's probably the best that we have.
That's true. But teams could probably beat us by not taking shots and lost balls into our box and waiting for him to miss it.
Watch him. I mean, because I remember like a couple weeks ago, he dove in and gave away like a stupid penalty. I don't know who was against him, but then right after that he saves the penalty like clockwork. But
Remember when our options were him and Fabianski?
Do you remember when our options were Fabianski and Almunia?
Yeah. I know. Yeah, so, I know we're here complaining about Cech, but let's look at, you know, he's certainly better than those options were.
Yeah. No, definitely. I want to. Just quickly, is something I touched on, and then we can certainly move on. The Alexis body language. Were you bothered by the throwing of the gloves and, you know, the yelling? And like I saw him yell at Ramsey once, and all the papers, of course, jumped on it and said, "Oh, well, this is a clear that he wants to leave," and this and that. You know, what kind of were your thoughts? Because I don't think he played that well. I mean, he scored the goal that Giroud assisted. I don't think he did much else otherwise. So I think it's one of those, I'm so much better than the rest of you. I can't believe you're not up to my level. Well, yeah, to an extent, but it's not like you were flawless, Alexis.
I don't know that's necessarily even what it is. Like, you know what I mean? Obviously the second that happened, I mean, literally the second it happened, it was everywhere on Twitter. Exactly like you said, that narrative. But I don't know that that's necessarily what it was. He wants to win the game so bad that that's just him. You don't see it talked about when we're winning. But that still happens when we're winning. It's just when we're not playing well or we're not winning a game we should be winning, that's when you see it really brought forward and put into the, you know, really talked about.
So do you think it's a competitiveness thing rather than a frustration or maybe unhappiness then?
I think he's frustrated and unhappy because he's so incredibly competitive. If he gets subbed off, he looks the same way. If he finishes a game and doesn't score a goal, he looks the same way. You know, I've played with guys before where it's the same thing. You make a bad pass and they're just that competitive. Chill out. Give them a couple minutes and they're fine. The next time you play them a ball at their feet, they completely forgot that it happened.
Yeah.
You know, I just think it's frustration with how that game was going combined with his competitive nature, to be honest.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, and you might be right. And
I hope I'm right.
Oh, I hope you're right too. And either way, unfortunately, you know, the gutter journalists in England are going to jump all over and say, "Oh, see, he's leaving," and "Oh, they got this big offer from China; they're probably going to sell him." But you know, certainly that's something we can talk about a little later. But I kind of wanted to transition because we just finished the 20th game of the season. All clubs finished their 20th game of the season with Chelsea's game against Tottenham today. You know, kind of starting first from an Arsenal perspective. Midway thoughts, you know, kind of where I know you were pretty optimistic about our title chances to start the season. I looking at your face right now, I'm guessing that's not the case anymore.
No, I don't. What are we, 9 points back?
Eight
points back. I mean, when you think about it that way, 8 points back with half the season to go, it's not crazy. It's unlikely, but it's not crazy. If we were maybe in the form that Liverpool or Tottenham playing well like that, if we were in that kind of form, I would feel so much more optimistic about it. I don't think we've really played well for a couple of months. You know, I remember us going when talking about our month of November and how it's like, you know, we started the month playing well, but we even the games we didn't play well towards the end, we still got results. We haven't played well since those beginning games in November. You know, we haven't been in that kind of form, and for whatever reason, whether it's injuries, whatever, we've been into it. We'll go into it more at another time, I'm sure. You know, if we were in better form, I would feel so much more optimistic. But personally, I think we're lucky to have the point total that we're at now. And we're at a point in time in the season where we can't afford to have any more injuries. And I certainly don't have any faith that we're not going to have more injuries. I think that Chelsea's got to get hit with injuries. I mean, the teams ahead of us, other than City, none of them have had to deal with any sort of injuries yet. You know, maybe I'm just so used to us always having to deal with them that I assume everybody else deals with them. I don't know.
I honestly think there's something to that because I think we look at it from the perspective of, oh, well, we've had all these injuries. At some point, everyone else will too. But I've never really seen any of the other clubs, and maybe it's just because I don't follow them as closely, but I've never seen any other of the other clubs have the volume of injuries that we do. You know, I mean, with Liverpool, you know, people said that because Klopp plays this style, they might start to see more of these injuries, but they only really have lost, you know, Coutinho. Yeah, they've lost him for a little while, but I don't think they've been losing chunks of players to the extent that we have, at least. You know, Chelsea, same. Yeah, they've been fairly lucky injury-wise, I will say. I can't remember if they've even had a major injury this season. Nothing comes to mind.
Somebody in midfield was out for a bit.
Yeah, I think maybe it was Matic or...
Was Kante out for a little while?
one of those three,
I think Kante was out for a bit, but...
Yeah, but so they really haven't. And Tottenham... I don't know if they have. City's had their share, I will say. You know, with Gundogan and Yaya Toure and company and Aguero and all those guys. So, you know, I think the other thing you brought up that was super, super insightful was the fact that we haven't played well, really, for any extended stretch of the season. And I think the frustrating thing is, okay, at the beginning of the season when you're grinding out results, I think all of us thought, oh man, we're grinding out these points that we don't really deserve. Just wait till we start clicking. We're not clicking. We haven't clicked. So at some point, are we waiting for something that's never going to come to where we don't hit that height of fluidity in our play? You know, am I being too cynical there, or do you kind of get that same feeling that we might just not click?
I certainly had. I mean, and like I said, I'm pretty sure I would have said it. I think we talked the same thing in November that, you know, we're getting these results in our form, but our form's going to come around and then we're going to continue getting results. It's getting more and more difficult to really think that we're going to turn it around. That's for sure. I mean, what signs do we have that's really going to change? Maybe we can go on the optimistic and say Xhaka and Ramsey are going to figure out our midfield. Ozil, because he's so goddamn good, is going to start connecting again. And you know what I mean? Like you can look around for and point out what could happen for us to really hit that form. But I'm having a hard time, and this is coming from the optimistic one that always tries to paint things on the positive light. I just don't necessarily know that we're going to get there. And it's a little bit, so it's not really, it's a little bit kind of changing the pace, but same kind of topic that we may have, I think we suffered a lot this year with our schedule. Just the number of games and how often they came with some of the new pieces that we tried to integrate into our side. That to me played a massive role in the lead that in the deficit that we're kind of finding ourselves in, you know, with Chelsea and Liverpool and Tottenham. Like, sure, Tottenham's had the same fixture, you know, same kind of fixtures, but that's the thing that scares me about Liverpool, is that they can just play one game a week and there you go.
But with the schedule, I mean, I don't know if our schedule's radically different than it has been in previous years.
No, I don't necessarily mean different from what our schedule is, just or what it has been. I think more.
Are you saying more from the perspective that Liverpool and Chelsea don't have those extra games? Maybe.
Yeah.
I think there's something to that. That certainly they've been able to stay fresh. I don't think there's any question there. You know, the frustrating thing is all these things about like not clicking. What were we? We were like 2 points behind until we lost those two games to City and Everton, where I mean, we should have gotten at least 2 points from those games, you know? But we basically have choked. We're 8 points behind. We'll look at it. We're 8 points behind right now. We've given away 8 points in the past 2-3 weeks. You know, you gave up three to, you know, you lost three at City, you lost three at Everton, you lost two at Bournemouth. There's your 8 point gap right there. The problem is I see the opportunity for Chelsea to drop points. The problem is the top six are separated by 10 points. So all these other teams have to drop points as well, you know? So, you know, let's function under this hypothetical situation. Let's say Chelsea lose, you know, Chelsea, I think they play like Leicester, Hull, Liverpool, and then us. So let's say they lose to Liverpool, win the other two, and we win out until then. And then we go to Chelsea and win. That would put us two behind them. The problem is then you have Liverpool would have picked up those points against Chelsea, you know, and you have City that would go on a run, and you have Tottenham, and you have United. It's not just Chelsea you have to focus on. So there's a gap that's developed to Chelsea, but you're not only chasing them, you still are competing against these other teams. And I think there's just so many moving pieces that I don't necessarily trust us to take care of our business. And I don't trust other dominoes to fall in our direction, if that makes sense.
Oh, it absolutely makes sense. And let's be, I'm just going to put it all out there. I think the title's gone. I don't think there's any chance of us winning the title. So me, you know, kind of look at what I was saying from that perspective, that I'm kind of more saying, let's just finish top four. You know, it's the typical Arsenal top four finish. But I mean, unless Chelsea loses Hazard, Conte, and Costa, they're not losing this title. But I do think the other teams around us are very fragile in terms of their squad and squad depth.
Yeah, I think, you know? Yeah, I think with Liverpool, they're not good defensively. I think you would think that at some point that was going to come back and bite them. You know, I think at some point they, you know, teams will start to sit back against them and, you know, not necessarily give them the free rein to just run and bomb forward in numbers. But, you know, every
teams, to be fair to, I mean, it's kind of a little hit at the rest of the Premier League, but teams never adjusted to Leicester last year, and we always said that they would.
That is also – no, that's a good point. Yeah, we always thought teams would eventually figure it out, so maybe I'm giving too much credit to Premier League coaches.
Then again, it does seem like teams have figured them out this year, but sorry.
Yeah. So Liverpool have defensive frailty. City, you know, they're still clicking, but I do think at some point City's going to go on a run. I just think Pep's getting super agitated with all the shit he's hearing, and I think that team's going to put it together. Tottenham, I mean, they're Tottenham, so they're not going to win a title. And United, they're hitting some form. They are, but most of their good form lately hasn't been against good teams. You know, I don't know. Their last four or five games, I don't know if they've really beaten anyone of note. I could be wrong. I'm sure someone from United will listen and hear this and complain. But, you know, all these teams have frailties, but it is sad what you said because it's accurate. I genuinely feel like the title is probably gone. And I saw some people bitching on Twitter like, oh, how can you ever count out your team? I'm like, look, I'm obviously going to pull for us to pull through and win, but I'm looking at our form and I'm looking at the teams ahead of us. I'm not seeing it. I'm not. And so I think the title's gone. And as much as I hate narratives and like, because this is what the pundits always talk about. Oh, Arsenal are just concerned about finishing top four. Well, look, it's January and we're concerned about just making the top four. I mean, didn't that piss you off a little bit?
Yeah, it does. But dude, look, we talked about it. The top six is separated by 10 points. It's a freaking battle, man. Back the last 5 or 6 years, I mean, really, probably about that long, it's just been brutal to try and win that league. And somehow Leicester does it. It takes a shit ton of luck to win that league. It's so competitive. Every single game, any team can beat any team on any day. And I don't think it's quite as simple as it was in the past when it was the big four. You know, there's a big six, and there's, well, a big five and a little brother, Tottenham.
Yes.
You know, that's just the way it's always going to be. I just think people, they underestimate what has to go right for you to win the title. Because you need to get lucky in your own results. You need to get lucky in other teams' results. You need big teams to drop points. And I don't necessarily know that we've seen too many really lower table teams beat. Maybe they have. Maybe it's just, I don't know. It's just, my point is that I think people oversimplify it, and this is like, oh, because we haven't won the title, we're not concerned with winning the title. And I think that thought process is just kind of bullshit. So
yeah, I mean,
I'm getting bitter.
No, it's just I think there's an understandable frustration though amongst Arsenal fans because look, we bitch about the fact that, like, oh my God, you know, the media hates Arsenal and there's all these narratives against us about being soft and falling apart and this and that. But then you look at what's unfolded and you can't necessarily say some of it doesn't hold merit. Now, granted, there's other factors that come into play, you know, injuries and fixtures and referees and things like that. But there is something frustrating about, you know, seeing the talent your team has, but then also seeing them out of contention for a title by the halfway point of the season. Now, I mean, granted, we could turn it around in the second half and we look completely wrong, but what I've seen is not giving me any inclination that that's going to happen, and that's being kind. So, you know, it's yesterday I was pretty frustrated just with how things were unfolding with the title. I mean, Chelsea losing, I guess, keeps everyone in it to some extent. But
sorry about that. My cat made an appearance on the podcast for not the first time.
it was a cute moment. To be honest with everyone, but but Chelsea, you know, I think they will drop points. I'm just not sure they're going to drop enough to where we can take advantage, because we basically have to win out, you know, or at least at the very least not lose more than one or two games for the rest of the season. I'm not sure I see that right now.
No, and I agree. And I do. I understand the frustration, because it does seem like it's the same thing over and over again. I don't know what it is, and that's the frustrating part. It's that, what do we need to have happen? What could they have done differently? I mean, we talked about it going into the season. We're like, okay, we'd like to add another wide player. We had midfield depth. We had Alexis really starting to do things at the center forward spot. We added a top class center back. We had, you know, the best right back in the league. We have the best number 10 in the world. Like, the pieces are there. And I think, and it's really, I think it's where you're getting at with your frustration, is that, in my opinion, the pieces were there, save for, you know, that one world-class wide player. And it kind of just goes along the same way that it always does. And that's the frustrating part. It's not necessarily frustrating to me that we haven't won the league in so long, or that we're probably not going to win it this year. It's just that it looks the same. Even though when we looked at our side earlier on in the season, we're like, you know what? We have ourselves, like, we have a complete squad. You know, I think I kind of put that how I wanted to, if that makes sense.
No, I get that. I do. I think it's just more the frustration that comes with this not being the first time, you know, where I went into that Bournemouth game yesterday with a concern that we were going to drop points, or even the Everton game. I looked at that game on the fixture list. I said, that's a game we might drop points. I couldn't explain why, it just felt like it. So I think it's like almost this, yeah, it's the deja vu, you know, similar to kind of what you were saying. It's the deja vu feeling of like, oh, here we go again. But this time around, there really is going to be a struggle to make top four. And I know that we say that every year, but I don't think I've ever seen the top six where there's this much parity. You know what I mean? I mean, Chelsea's been good, but even they started the season quite poorly. It's not like they were dominant from the beginning. They've hit a good run of form since we beat them.
Kind of to that point, I know, sorry to interrupt. I'm in the mood to kind of brighten the mood here as we finish up. I know we really just sunk into a really depressed state there, and we need to fix this. Chelsea just ran off, what was it, 13 straight wins? Yeah. Tying our record. Thank you, Tottenham. I say that for probably the one and only time I ever will. But they ran off that many wins in a row. And I don't want to say it like they're only 8 points ahead, but for winning that many games in a row, if I was them, I would be disappointed that we were only 8 points ahead. So I think, again, I'm kind of reaching for some optimism, but there's no way in hell they keep up the pace that they've been on the last 2 months. They're coming back down to earth. There is an opportunity that, you know, like I said, I know I said I think the title's lost. I do. I still think the title's lost, but I think there's room to make it interesting. And I'm personally going to be going into the second half of the season hoping that it gets interesting as hell. I want to go into the last month of the year with all six of those teams separated by 6 points, 5 points, and just, can you imagine, just the storylines, man. That would just be incredible. And I think I think that's the way it's going to happen. I think Chelsea's got enough of a cushion that they should see it out, but I really hope it just turns into a slugfest and these six teams battle it out to the end, and may the best teams win it, you know?
I think it'll become extremely interesting if Chelsea lose to Liverpool in a couple of weeks. I don't know when that is. Yeah. I think that would be really interesting. Or even if they draw, actually. If you think about it, if they draw, both of those teams drop 2 points.
Way better result, by the way.
Yeah, conceivably a City or an Arsenal or United or Tottenham can take advantage of that. Now, granted, all these big teams still have to play each other, so there's a lot of moving pieces. But I do think that would be awfully interesting if that result happens, because I think Chelsea play us right after they play Liverpool. If I'm not mistaken,
January 31st, Liverpool, February 4th, Arsenal.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's correct. That might be the two biggest weeks of Chelsea's season.
Absolutely.
So
and they could drop 6 points right there.
Yeah.
5 points.
And so all of a sudden, you know, things change. So, you know, for as much as we have been kind of doom and gloom, and I do still think the title's probably out of our reach. I mean, there are some things that could happen that could change that. But, you know, since we are kind of at the halfway point of the season, I just kind of want to get some quick, you know, summaries about certain players and specifically from an Arsenal perspective, but we can certainly talk about others. You know, from your perspective, Arsenal's best player this season, Alexis, no-brainer?
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay. Biggest disappointment?
Biggest disappointment. I'm more disappointed, and it's hard to say it's a disappointment because I don't know really where my expectations were. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain, that he hasn't been able to establish himself as our go-to wide player, because the opportunity's there, and he has shown flashes that you're like, you know, maybe he's starting to turn the corner, and then he disappears again. So for me, it's Ox.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout. I know. I remember one of our first podcasts we did together. We both kind of talked about how Ox was kind of primed for a breakout season, or that might have just been me. I know I was very excited for Ox this season.
I'm sure I was right there with you. I think I was more skeptical for sure. But
yeah, so it might have just been me on that one, because you know I saw his form in preseason, really thought he was going to put it together. And to his credit, like lately he's been better, but still not showing the consistency that I'd like to see from him. Biggest disappointment for me, I mean, it's tough to pin one player. I don't think Nacho Monreal's been that good this season. I think I've seen a noticeable dip in his play. Granted, you know, sometimes he's had Iwobi covering, you know, on the left wing, and Iwobi doesn't necessarily track back. But even in games that Iwobi hasn't been, I think he's been getting beat for pace quite easily. That game against City, you know, he let Sterling cut inside on his left foot, get a shot off. I don't think he's been great. I think left back's a position we need to address moving forward. Yeah, Middlesbrough as well. Traore made Monreal his bitch that game. Like, that was embarrassing.
And that's putting it nicely.
Yeah. I mean, I think left back is a position we got to look at. I love Jose Luis Gaya from Valencia. I hope he's the guy, but we'll see. We did
first season FIFA buy every single year.
I mean, that kid's gonna be a beast. But we did sign Cohen Bramall from Hednesfield or something.
I don't know. Well, I saw Wenger's comments today were something along the lines of, he's an exceptional athlete and he's got a lot of skill. He's just not quite ready. But
yeah, so that's
basically what he said. He reminded him of Ashley Cole. So
high praise.
We've got the next Ashley Cole on our hands.
Yeah. Let's say best summer signing thus far. I mean, it comes down to Mustafi and Xhaka. I think Mustafi takes it for me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, maybe have we really had a breakthrough player this year? I really don't see that.
I would probably say Wilshere at Bournemouth for staying healthy.
I guess that counts. Yeah,
that's a stretch I wanted to do, you know.
We're stretching there. Yeah.
You think my Ramsey fanboy shows? Wait till we get Jack back and healthy.
I mean, he's been staying healthy at Bournemouth. Once he puts that Arsenal jersey on, I'm convinced he'll bring it on.
I was watching, not this past weekend, but the weekend before that. Maybe it was this past weekend. I don't know. But it's been a crazy couple of months. He feathered a gorgeous through ball to a Fobe who just couldn't slip it past the keeper. And I was just like, He's back. There's the Jack we've been looking for. And
he's definitely showing it, right?
He's getting there. He's getting there. So, anybody that you think is primed for a second half breakout?
I think Ramsey. It's not a breakout in the sense that like he's not going to come out of nowhere. I just think he's due for a good stretch of play, and I think that Jaka Ramsey pivot is going to work. I would say him. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Ox is going to do it. So yeah, that has to be the guy. It really does. And like you said, it's not really a breakout. It's more of a step your form way the hell up.
Yeah. Let's throw this one out there. You're Premier League player of the season thus far.
If Alexis has been really good, Hazard's been really good. One of those two.
I'm gonna throw out a name I never thought I would say in a positive way. Diego Costa. And it made me sad to say that.
He scores a shit ton of goals, but
and his discipline's been a lot better this. His discipline's been a lot better this season.
Dude, he looks fit and he looks enthusiastic. He's a scary, scary man.
Yeah, I mean, you got to throw him in that conversation. You know, you probably also throw Sadio Mane in there.
Honestly, I'm not surprised that he's had the impact that he's had. He fits that system so perfectly. He really does.
So I would probably put Costa and Mane in there, but you're going with Alexis,
or you going Hazard
slash Hazard? Okay. Biggest disappointment team wise, and then we'll go like biggest surprise team wise as well.
Yeah, you go first.
Biggest disappointment team wise, West Ham. I did not think that they were going to...
I picked them for a potential top sixer.
I did not think they were going to suck this much. You know, I mean, granted, they've had some bad decisions go against them in recent games, but...
they're 13th, which isn't terrible.
But, I mean, with the players they have, I think they should be better. You know,
I think
they should be ahead of a Bournemouth or a West Brom, or even a Southampton or... they're behind Burnley. Okay, never mind. I can't defend that. No. They're behind Burnley. I think Bilic is kind of hit that sophomore slump, so they've kind of been a disappointment for me. My biggest surprise, probably West Brom, you know? They're in eighth right now. They haven't been totally defensive. You know, it hasn't been such a Pulis team. I think they do have some decent attacking players, but they... To his credit, you know, like, not everyone can play beautiful football. I think people don't realize that. Like, some teams don't have the personnel. I think he's getting the best out of that team, so they'd be my surprise.
Yeah, they're always a kind of a mid-table. I'm surprised Bournemouth is sitting in ninth. In a positive way. I think that's really impressive what they've been able to put together. I mean, the bottom three, it's Sunderland, Swansea, Hull. I think for a lot of people, Swansea's kind of a surprise. I had a feeling that this was finally going to be the year they fell back to earth. So what makes me 1-1? Just going to throw that out there. But, I'd probably go Bournemouth for a positive, and then I certainly can't disagree with West Ham. And in their defense, they did have to deal with a lot of injuries, but – even they just haven't looked good at all.
I think, and you bring up Swansea, and I haven't gotten a chance to speak with you since the Bradley firing. I know we're kind of running out of time. Just maybe get 2 or 3 minutes from you on the Bradley firing. I just want to point out one thing before you start. The U.S. fans who have been flipping out and being like, oh, well, Bradley didn't get a transfer window, and oh, you know, it's anti-Americanism because other managers get a chance, and it's just, he never got a fair chance, and this and that. Okay, shut the fuck up. It's Mike Phelan at Hull got 85 or 82 days, like similar to Bradley. He just got fired. It's not an anti-American thing. In the Premier League, when you're threatened with relegation, owners have a quick trigger. That's just the way it is, and this idea that somehow there was some anti-American conspiracy, when the truth of the matter is he only got hired because he was American with American ownership. So I just wanted to throw that out there because it's just been frustrating because all of a sudden all the U.S. soccer fans are Swansea experts. I guarantee they've not watched a Swansea game before the season, and they probably hadn't watched one until Bob Bradley started taking charge. But I talked a lot about this last week, so I'm not going to bore everyone with that. But
and
I would,
that's all right. But the thing about that is I feel like he didn't really get the chance to make the changes that he wanted to make. But it's the Premier League. There is so much money in staying up in the top flight, and you just can't screw around with that. And the team got worse after he took over.
Yeah, that's so, the thing. They gave up an additional goal a game.
Bunker Bob.
Yeah, so, I mean, kind of what were your takeaways from his tenure and
It's funny calling it a tenure.
I know. It was not even a tenure. It was like a short nap or something.
2 months or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a little surprising they pulled the trigger so soon, but I also understand. I didn't think it was going to happen, but I can't blame him. And it's not because he's an American. So that's it. Not talking about that anymore. Yeah. All right. So I think we're pretty much at our time limit here. Don't want us to ramble on too much longer. So we back to Arsenal really quick. We've got the FA Cup this weekend. We have, is it Preston?
Preston North End or something.
Preston. Let's see some rotation in the side and get out of there with an easy win. We need to pick up points. We need to pretty much run the table through January with fixture list again. Sorry, really quickly. Swansea, Burnley, Watford. We need to win those three games if we want to stay where we are and push for that title.
Do you think we do win those games?
I do, because I think Ramsey and Xhaka are just going to tear it up. So we're good. Back on the positive train to end the show.
I like it. I like it a lot. We'll see what happens. FA Cup, hopefully we put together a decent side. I mean, it's funny because Xhaka, Ramsey almost have to play because there are no other midfielders.
You know what? To be fair, I don't really care.
I'd like to win that just because it's our most realistic chance of winning anything.
It is, but with the lack of options we have in midfield right now, I don't know. It makes me nervous, especially with Ramsey's hamstring history in the last year.
Yeah, that's
makes me nervous.
I'm not sure.
I would rather rotate, keep everybody healthy. No, yeah, I'm not sure he does.
Yeah, I think he might just be functioning without any muscle tissue in there.
Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly how it's working.
Yeah. But I was glad that the two of us got to get back on. I know with holidays it's always tough, so I know people have been like, "Well, we never Ian and Alex together." But
yeah, it's been kind of crazy.
Hectic time.
Going forward, we're gonna look to get it more locked down to a schedule, so you guys are gonna know exactly when to expect episodes from us.
Yeah, definitely. And again, you know, if all of y'all could spread the word, if you like what we're doing, find us on Facebook, facebook.com/EuroSnobPod. I try to keep that pretty up to date with all of our episodes. Twitter.com/EuroSnobPod. And then, you know, we also have the Wix site, which is EuroSnobPod. Oh, God, I forgot what it is.
Yeah, there's a link on our...
To our Twitter account. Everything's there. And then, you know, certainly find me on Twitter at UFGunnerAJ. And Ian, where can the folks find you?
Oh, you can find me at GunnersFan6 on Twitter.
Yeah. And again, send all complaints, hate mail, or anything negative to Ian. He's always receptive to that.
I'll just... Yeah, pretty much. Just bring it on. Let's go. But, guys... We hit, you know, we reviews and ratings, even if it's just a rating on iTunes, if you listen to it, just click over to the podcast page in your little podcast app on iTunes and just click however many stars you want to give us, preferably 5.
Well, and even if you didn't listen, just click it anyways and then have your parents do it and your friends do it. just because you want to be a nice person.
Steal your girlfriend's phone and review our podcast on that too.
Yeah, whatever you got to do, you know.
I didn't do that.
Yeah, no, I've not done that before.
My wife's phone. Yeah. Sorry.
I was gonna say slip of the tongue there.
I'm getting evil eyes from the other room right now. Yeah. All right, on that note, guys, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch up with you soon. Take care.
All right, have a good one, guys.